You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So last weekend, as well as in the States, there have been anti-Asian hate protests going on following the shootings in Atlanta in the States of many Asian women, as well as the increase in anti-Asian hate due to COVID-19. So I began to investigate this by talking to both Kiwi and American Asian activists, as well as Yale University COVID-19 public health researcher Steph Tan, who organized the anti-Asian hate protest in Auckland last weekend, addressing the increase in anti-Asian hate rhetoric in New Zealand. So I've been noticing a lot of differences in the dialogue around racism in Auckland and the U.S., which I didn't really expect, but yeah. So
wow.
Within the past year, there has been an increase of hate crimes against Asian communities since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Why do you think this has happened?
Suddenly, so we have a lot of harmful rhetoric being shuffled around, not just by everyday people, but also by well-known political leaders and also the media. When you have headlines such as China virus, people don't look deeper in. They use that as a reason to blame a certain racial group for the pandemic. And then just with COVID, it amplified all the racism towards Asians that already existed. I feel like it has brought it all to the surface. COVID suddenly did not cause the racism towards Asians. It's always happened to us, but there has been this long silence. And now it's gotten to a point where we see people of our skin color killed purely based on being Asian, and we've had enough and we're all breaking our silence.
So why do you think the States has such an influence on activism that happens in New Zealand? Is there a similarity between the experiences that Asian Kiwis and Asian Americans have?
Absolutely. I personally, since I have only lived in the U.S. for the past several years, I have been in pockets of the U.S. where I have felt really safe and loved and admired for who I am as a person. I'm known for Steph. I'm not known as that token Asian girl or the cool or hot Asian. I'm literally just known as me, and I have felt wholeheartedly connected to myself and really developed a whole newfound appreciation for my Asian heritage in the United States, which I know is a contrast to what people hear about the American experience. I certainly don't want to take away from the fact that there are certainly many Asian Americans undergoing horrific racial traumas, as you can see through the news and all the horrific events happening there right now. Certainly, I don't want to take away from that, but I just found it so fascinating that I've been in environments where it's a complete opposite from how I grew up in New Zealand. And that's why these movements in America relate so much to us here in New Zealand as Kiwi Asians, because I personally grew up with and intense and frequent racism towards me and other Asians. And I know this experience is universal, as my friends and I all felt this way. My mother, as a migrant, felt racism. She has different racial attacks from me as a Kiwi born and bred Asian. But this is so pervasive and prevalent in New Zealand. So we connected extremely deeply to what we see in America today. And we even have a rise in brutal attacks towards Asian people in New Zealand, especially last year throughout coronavirus. So we're definitely addressing this now and not waiting for it to get any worse, because by then it's too late.
That's very interesting that your experiences in America have been kind of positive compared to New Zealand, because that goes against maybe the stereotypical like idea of what experiences in America versus here might be, especially me, you know, coming to New Zealand having no idea like about the culture here. And from my impression, my first impression was that New Zealand's like a country that prides itself on being non-racist, but why do our anti-racist movements highlight kind of the lack of empathy and dialogue regarding racism towards non-white communities?
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up incredible points. I personally feel that we have this facade of anti-racism, of diversity, of just complete kindness that you highlight as someone, you know, who's come to New Zealand recently. I 100% believe we have had put up that facade, and it actually has not been working for us because it makes people not address all their biases and racism that they may have. And I know it's really hard to look inwards when you have this image of New Zealand as beautiful, amazing, kind, anti-racist, but now we have to look at the facts that racism happens here really horrifically, and we can't ignore that anymore, and we can't just put on this image to the rest of the world that's not true. We, like America, like other countries, have to address the fact that this happens. And like you said, based on the media that we have here, I found that going from America back to New Zealand, even just searching the news on my Google, it's very skewed. The image of New Zealand is portrayed completely differently in that it's always held up with a halo, and there's no recognition or very little recognition of the painful traumas that we faced, and it feels very bemoaning. Whereas in America, headlines, no one really says, oh, today many people were kind to Asian people. That never makes the headline. It's always going to be some horrific, shocking story. And so when people repeatedly see that, they assume that America is far worse, and they compare themselves and say, New Zealand is nothing like America. We're not racist. We're totally good. But I urge for everyone to not make such comparisons, because we need to remember headlines are simply shedding light on horrific events that happen. And New Zealand, it's time to show the truth that we experience this. This is a daily struggle. And now that we address this, we can move forward together.
Yeah, I often find that my experience in America is more that people know that they're being racist and they will directly act on these prejudices. But in New Zealand, it's often like they don't even seem to understand that they're being racist, or that it's so part of like their jokes they say or their culture that they don't even, they're not able to recognize it when I call it out. What do you think contributes to the lack of knowledge or maybe education around racial relations and potentially systematic racism in the New Zealand system, and how can we continue these important conversations?
Personally, when I grew up going to high school here, we didn't have many classes or any kind of conference of anti-racism or discussions of social issues in which we directly address racism. So the lack of discussion in that obviously led to a lot of ignorance. But from what I hear today, I've had someone enlighten me that they have had an anti-racism class in their school, but that all other schools in New Zealand should certainly engage in that. And also, there are a lack of situations in which we encourage the celebration of various cultures. Growing up, we didn't have many shared lunches or educational events in which we could celebrate Asian culture. And so that leads to further divide and further lack of understanding of cultural variations, in which today I encourage workplaces, schools, all, you know, large institutions to have days where you celebrate each other's cultures, have shared lunches, have a great conversation over food, and even discuss the history of racism, how there were anti-Chinese policies dated in both the US and New Zealand, and how that's contributed to certain discrimination today. But also sharing personal stories, I think, is so important, because I personally believe we cannot have a strong systematic approach unless we understand people's personal stories. And like you said, a lot of people are unintentionally racist or are not aware of them being racist, and that's because they don't know what it looks like. And I'm sure that if they were enlightened of what this looks like, that things could change.
All right. Well, that is all the questions that I have. Maybe if you could comment on how members of non-Asian communities could also support their Asian community, like friends and members as well.
Yeah, certainly. On an individual level, checking up on your Asian friends, especially when you hear news about Asian attacks, definitely reaching out to them and saying, hey, I heard of this horrific news. I'm so sorry. Would you like to talk about this? I'm here to listen and to talk about anything. Please let me know if there's anything I can do. And then if you observe a situation, whether it's subtle or overt, definitely standing up and saying this is not okay. And these subtle situations can be simply exclusion or people acknowledging a whole racial group and then ignoring an Asian person. That's a form of racism that a lot of people aren't able to recognize. And so being aware when situations like that happen, and if they see that, again, checking in and saying, are you okay? I'm here with you. You know, we're totally here to support each other. And then on a societal level, being able to support Asian businesses, because a lot of them really suffered during coronavirus, particularly more than other businesses because of the harmful China virus, where it led to irrational fears of eating Chinese food and contracting the virus and other racial associations. So being able to support these businesses and celebrating the culture and showing this complete lack of fear that you're not going to get coronavirus from eating at these businesses, because that's an incredibly racist assumption. Being able to support these Asian businesses, eating your favorite Asian foods at restaurants, I think that's a fantastic way to support people on a social level.
So that was Kiwi and American Asian activist and Yale University COVID-19 public health researcher Steph Tan, who organized the anti-Asian hate protests in Auckland last weekend, addressing the increase in anti-Asian hate rhetoric in New Zealand. Next, I talked to my international context in the States and talked to filmmaker and Korean-American community leader Christian Oh, who runs several community festivals and is the chairperson of DC Shorts and the DC Asian American Film Festival, about the rise of anti-Asian hate crime since the onset of COVID-19 in the States. There's been a big increase in Asian American racism and attacks since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Why do you think this has happened?
Well, there's two things. Number one, since last year's BLM, and also I don't like to talk politics, but understand that racism has existed since I was a little kid. It's not that there's a huge increase. It's just there's been more attention. I've fought racism all my life. I grew up, first of all, I came to Ames, Iowa. So a film like Minari, which takes place in Arkansas, really resonates with me because my father didn't come to the States to become a farmer. He was one of the first Asian students at Iowa State University. And to be the only Asian in a 1,000-mile radius and to actually go to school at a predominantly white university, racism was there. He sort of raised us in a very different way from typical Asian American parents. He said he didn't want us to speak Korean in the house because he goes, I never want you guys to ever have to be made fun of because of your accent. Because he had to face that. He faced it every day at school, not just because of his accent, but because of the way he looked. So to answer your question, because I can go into a long backstory, but it's not that it's increased. It's always been there. We're now focusing a lens on it because of the political nature of Corona and what governments may or may have not done correctly or failed to do, and even just violence overall. I mean, we live in a country where anyone can pick up a gun, where anyone can get a gun. We're not like Japan or Korea, where it's very difficult to actually have a gun or get a gun. And with that kind of access, obviously, we're going to get more light and more instances of violence. And the racism has been there, but the violence, yeah, maybe because of our access, our violence has increased. And then reporters, I mean, I don't want to talk about the media, but the media, the way that they report on things. I mean, there have been violent and racial things the past decade that they have not reported on, that they failed to report on. And so it's not that it's increased. It's just that, yes, they're being much more cognizant. They are reporting on it because it is the, quote, you know, highlight of news right now. You know, every little thing that they can capture or that is captured is now being told. I mean, remember, 20 years ago, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have, you know, the ability to capture video and upload it as soon as possible or to document these sort of racist attacks. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It's just that we now have the capability of to show it more and that, you know, people are able to see it more. Big problem.
So with these rising racial tensions in America, there have been many response like movements within the past years, such as the Black Lives Matter movement and now the anti-Asian hate protests. How do you think minority communities can kind of come together to support one another without getting in each other's way or like trying to speak on behalf of one another when we need to give each other space? How can we work together?
I think the biggest thing to work together is that we've got to stop the vitriol and the hate and the blaming. Yes, not all minority organizations or groups work together well. And it even happens within the Asian ethnic groups, Chinese versus Korean. Korean, you know, we've got history with Japanese. You know, my parents and my grandparents' generation, they have major umbrage against the Japanese for the Japanese occupation. But back to your question, with African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and even Asian Americans, we need to start thinking about ways of how can we communicate better? How can we also share our struggles? Because obviously the struggles of an African American is much different from the struggles of an Asian American, as well as Hispanic American. You know, I've said this before, and people either agree with me or they sort of are against what I'm saying here, but African Americans, you can be from Nigeria or you can be from Southwest DC, and the color of your skin bounds you because of the years of historical suffrage and slavery that has existed. Not just the slavery itself, but even civil rights, right? Then you've got Hispanics. You can be from Puerto Rico and you can be from Mexico. You may hate each other, but guess what you're connected with? You're connected by language. You can speak the same language, regardless of whether you're from, like I said, Latin America or South America or wherever. But with Asians, we have such a wide disparity of language. We don't connect on even a color skin level, except for the racism that we endure within a all white or all non-Asian community. And that's happened. I mean, you know, if you go back even just shortly back in history, back to the LA riots and Rodney King, it was African Americans against Asian Americans in the streets of LA because businesses, Asian American businesses, were being owned and utilized within African American or black neighborhoods. And so there was animosity, there was jealousy, there's whatever you want to call it, you know. And again, I'm not going to pinpoint blame or anything, but I think as minority groups, we need to have better representation. I think if we want to change anything in this country or other countries, you need to have representation. We don't. We need more, you know, not just African-American and Hispanic-American government representation, but we also need Asian-American representation. And we don't have it. Because let's face it, most immigrants that have come to this country, our parents and our parents' parents, they've never said, oh, Jade or Christian, go be a politician. That is the last thing that they want for their kids to be.
Yeah.
They want them to be doctors, lawyers, anything that makes a big income because they're chasing the American dream.
So that was filmmaker and Korean-American community leader Christian Oh, who runs several community festivals and is the chairperson of DC Shorts and the DC Asian American Film Festival, talking about the rise of anti-Asian hate crimes since the onset of COVID-19. Finally, I talked to Vietnamese-American community leader Nicholas LaFam, who is the board director of the Progressive Vietnamese-American Organization and the founder of the VietFest Community Festival, about the increase of anti-Asian hate rhetoric in the States. A lot of American community leaders have said that recent waves of anti-Asian violence and harassment was kind of spurred last year by the rhetoric of former President Donald Trump. What would you say, like, the power of language has to incite discrimination and racism?
I think language plays a very big role, particularly when it comes from leaders who wield a significant platform and influence. And, you know, as you mentioned, he was the former president of the United States, the leader of the free world, so to speak. And so when someone of that stature speaks, it carries a lot of weight. It trickles down to the entire, you know, federal workforce and government, because when the president speaks, it becomes U.S. policy. And so it will influence people to, especially when he scapegoats Asian Americans for a virus, which is something that happens naturally in the wild, in nature, all the time. You know, viruses and other pandemics happen all the time across like species and whatnot. So when you scapegoat an entire people for that, it gives people license and in some ways influences them in what is already a difficult time to, you know, blame or and act upon, you know, not just these bigoted ideas, but sometimes it manifests itself into acts of violence and hate.
Yeah, and although Asian American racism is clearly a huge issue in America that needs to be addressed, Americans seem to have a better understanding of identity politics and how to talk about racism, because we kind of experience it more in our daily discussions and in our news and media every day, more so than other westernized countries such as New Zealand. So how can we continue these important, difficult conversations and kind of be an example for other countries like New Zealand in how we tackle these important issues?
I think that one of the characteristics of the United States that makes it more malleable for these types of conversations is that you have a lot more like waves of immigration that occur annually. And you've had historically, obviously, the legacy of slavery, the legacy of, you know, Jim Crow, like segregationist policies, as well as historically against, you know, all communities, including the Asian American community, from Chinese Exclusion Act to the internment of Japanese Americans. So I think the U.S. has, because of through the nature of, you know, history, has had to reckon with issues related to race relations more, you know, directly. And because, you know, there was a civil war, for instance. And so I think that conversation is where it begins. You know, people have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable when you're having conversations. And as long as you're having it with an open mind and a intent to learn and to listen to other people's life experiences that do not mirror your own, then that's where both acknowledgement of pain can happen, where healing can occur, and being able to be part of the solution and make changes in your everyday neighborhood that can lead to more productive outcomes.
So that was Vietnamese American community leader Nicholas Lafam, who is the board director of the Progressive Vietnamese American Organization and founder of the VietFest Community Festival, about the increase of anti-Asian hate rhetoric in the States.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.